All right, this is episode 869. Let's kick it off. Give me a count around, Joel.
3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
Big old show time!
So you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And IC challenge LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 869 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going?
We have Joel.
Good evening.
Rich is here.
From the Hughes Compound Southern Command with the bird.
And Jive and Joe.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
All night long on the radio.
And Dan and the cricket.
Many crickets. There's a cicada or a locust in this tree that goes off every so often.
Terrific.
Damn. So what's new? What's going on?
I was on. Well, Lil Bean, he hasn't released it yet, but a couple friends and I met over at his house yesterday, and we recorded an episode of the Living in the 80s podcast. And this one was all about video games.
Is this a newer podcast?
Yeah, it's started by a friend of mine. There's a group called Living in the 80s on Facebook. And it started out kind of mostly with a lot of his friends, including myself, and local people, and it's kind of branched out from there. Like, he's had an episode on I think one of the next episodes is 80s rides from movies and stuff, and things like that. So it's been a pretty good show, and it kind of inspired something new that I'm also going to start. There's that scene in War Games where Matthew Broderick was playing Galaga, and there was a song in the background called "Living." That had the line in it, "Living in the shade of a video arcade." Well, my new podcast is going to be "Living in the Shade of an 80s Arcade." So it's going to be all 80s arcade games and video games too, but mostly arcade games I'm going to try to stick to. And I'm going to cover things like first episode is on Pong. And I think my next episode is going to be Space Invaders. And it's going to talk about not just the original game, but, like, you know, how many different ports of Space Invaders.
Okay, now, you're talking about 80s gaming here.
Yes, pretty much 80s gaming.
Pong was 70s.
Correct, but it's the granddaddy of them all, and you really have to talk about it, I think. But anyway,
okay,
that's kind of why I started.
Checking to see, because... Yeah, you're starting a podcast, and you have a topic picked, which is great. But I don't know, are you planning on making it into a long-term podcast?
Yeah, go on as long as I can.
Okay.
Because, you know, because there's a lot of obscure video games in there, too. I mean, I'll, of course, start with the everybody's favorites, you know. But there's a lot of video games.
Are you going to stick to just video games? Yeah. You could do
not
that
just
for forever, but
yeah.
Consoles and things like that. Because if you're talking about the 80s and you're talking about games, then you got to talk about, you know, the Nintendo, which
absolutely
basically created the whole market even more than Atari
did.
Yeah,
I beg to differ. Atari did first.
No, Atari did it first, but Nintendo really got it out there to everybody.
Yeah. Well, Nintendo rescued it from the brink. Essentially,
right.
It
Atari had kind of fallen by the wayside by what was it, 1984?
Where was the video game crash?
84 or 86 when the Nintendo first hit the market.
I think it's 84 or 85. I can't remember. Okay. But somewhere around there. That was funny because we were talking about one of the games that was on the... Because he'll do a poll for some of his shows where people get to vote on their favorite video games from the 80s or their favorite whatever, you know. Video games was, of course, the one we looked at last night. And one of the games on the list was Super Mario Brothers 3. And I thought, isn't that 90s? But no, it actually came out in 1989.
Okay.
So... that's kind of why
Space Invaders. That was on.
Yes, I thought.
Okay, I'm not sure either.
Right, but that's one of the things. Like one of the things I questioned when we were recording the show last night was Space Invaders technically came out in 1978, but tell me. An 80s arcade that didn't have a Space Invaders machine. So that's why I'm counting it as an 80s arcade, 80s video game. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of...
Still, you kind of have to count Pong as a 70s video game.
True. But,
But the variants, yes, they were very, very popular in the 80s and even the 90s.
Absolutely. But... So, and it won't be, like, just the games themselves. I know...
Welcome to your first episode.
Yes, but I'm gonna do a show on Chuck E. Cheese because Chuck E. Cheese is entwined with video games. It was started by Nolan Bushnell, so who started the Atari?
Was now it kind of sucks.
Now it's kind of bankrupt.
But Joe,
the death of the arcade. You should discuss the death of the arcade.
Hey, oh, Joe, yeah.
It's gonna be in there.
83 was the release year for the Famicom in Japan, and then
in Japan, right?
86, it made its way into the United States.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. I thought there was quite a bit of difference.
I'm sorry, 85. It was 85.
And early on, too, with those, with video games at the very beginning, you know, wasn't like today where you have like a different Call of Duty every year or you probably don't have a different Call of Duty, but like different games every year. Like there was always a new version, you know,
such thing as DLC back in the '80s.
That too. I mean,
you got the whole game all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and then like, you know, you talk about like, some of the early games like Space Invaders wasn't even full color. At the beginning, it was all a black and white game, and the colors it got were from the overlay. So, I mean, you know, so there's just a lot of interesting things and topics, and just like talking about
games
the different arcades.
You didn't need more than two colors for, like, yeah. Asteroids.
Yep. Well, Asteroids is all. Actually, I don't think. Was there. I guess some of them had overlays. I don't remember.
I never
Asteroids
saw.
Asteroids was two colors. That was black and white. What else did you need?
I never saw a Space Invaders with color. I don't recall that in the arcade.
Some of them had a green overlay over the bottom portion of the screen, so like the base and the turret itself was green. All right, but the invaders were white. Now you can tell that it was an overlay too by when you got to the stage of the game where the alien ones were right. About the same level as those shields were, you'd see them turn green too. So I mean, you could just tell. But another weirdness, I'm sure I'm going to talk about the Laserdisc video games, which are one of the few video games out there that you really can't play today.
But what about
very
the
well.
The VHS video games?
That's but is that 80s though?
I think that was late 80s. It might have been early 90s, but I think it was late 80s.
What was a VHS video game?
Yeah, that's actually going to be my question, because I don't even remember that.
VHS video games. My dad had one, but I don't remember what year it was. It was like some weird flight game. Action Max?
Are you talking maybe like, was it Captain Power, I think?
I'm trying to remember. Like I said, it's... probably 30 years now. I was young.
Okay, Action Max, you're
right. Captain Power.
You are right. Action Max was one.
But yeah, it's where you had the toy in your hand and you basically it was a light gun.
Yeah.
No way. Really? I'm going to the Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
I remember that show. Entry.
Right. Guess who wrote for the show?
Who?
J. Michael Straczynski, who wrote Babylon 5.
Huh. Yeah, I remember you buy the toys and they'd have the little
That was 80s, 87 yeah, light through 88. Guns I guess that qualifies. More of a toy than a game, though. But yeah, I mean, that might qualify.
But yeah, it was Captain Power. I recognize the box looking at the website.
Yep, or like, and definitely going to do an episode on movies that feature video games. Like, for example, you know, I've already mentioned it, War Games.
It was 1987, so yes, it was the 80s.
Mm-hmm. But you got War Games, and then you had, remember what is another one, Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
A lot of the growth of D&D happened in the 70s, but a lot of the popularity continued through the 80s, so you could definitely put that in there. Granted, most of the heavier changes to D&D didn't happen until after 3.5.
But the advanced D&D.
Yeah, after 4th edition, I'd say. 4th, yep. 5th edition, you started seeing really heavy changes.
Yeah, but I'm not sure D&D, though, is very much about video games.
Well, you said board games, too.
When you say the growth of D&D, what do you mean by that?
Well, D&D has been around for, let's look it up. Because I know it saw a large outgrowth in popularity in the 70s. And that was due to a lot of, pushback from parents' groups saying that it was Satanism.
In the 70s or in the 80s?
I'm pretty sure that was the 70s where that movie came out.
Mazes and Monsters.
Mazes and Monsters.
I thought
you.
That was
I know we've
early
discussed
80s.
That on the show board. Was it?
Because I was going to say, I know like D&D went through a bunch of, starting off with like chainmail was one of the main things that started off. That started off D&D, and they started writing rules for that, and they evolved into the basic set, or there was actually the white basic set. What was 82 was Mazes and Monsters.
82.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
another topic, I will definitely cover Nintendo as a topic, period, because
okay,
a lot
and
of
the first booklet was published in
1974.
Yeah. Okay. So my timing is a little off there.
Yeah, wasn't until like so 81 had AD and advanced D&D.
Right.
Because I would say like I know there was a lot of like development of D&D in the 70s. It originated in the early mid to late 70s, and it wasn't because I would say I don't know how big it was in the older community, but like all of my friends, we all played D&D, and that's when you started. 80s? Yeah, in the 80s, that's when you started seeing it showing up in like Walden Books and stores in the mall and stuff. I know that. And then the big satanic panic about it. And I had a friend who owned a hobby shop, and they used to get a lot of crap because they had D&D stuff in there, and they were threatened to lose business from some of the local church groups because of that.
That was pretty big.
See, I remember that too. That's kind of one of the reasons why Mom never let me play. But you know, I actually wasn't interested in it anyway. Just
how
wasn't
could you not
my
be
thing.
Interested in D&D?
I never was into fantasy. I always liked the science fiction over fantasy.
He was a traveler player.
Oh, okay. You played the RPGs for fantasy?
No, I never really played RPGs.
Just bedroom RPGs?
Did you play Traveler, Joe?
No, I haven't.
Nah,
so, I'm a Shadowrun fan, but...
Okay.
Between Shadowrun, Vampire the Masquerade, and D&D, and then there was one other one that was a quasi... card game that was an RPG, or all of your stuff was all your items and your character was all cards, but you actually played like an RPG.
Who was that?
As opposed to, like, I'm trying to remember, it was
was it a Steve Jackson game?
Trying to remember. It's been a long time. If my wife was in the room, I'd ask her.
I'm sorry, Joel. We went off on a tangent. You were in the middle of something.
It's all right.
Because D&D is awesome.
It is. Yeah. It is.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dragonstorm.
Okay. I don't recall that one.
It didn't stick around for very long.
Well, look it up. Sorry, Joel.
Oh, it's okay. But that's what I want to do. And I'm actually doing the podcast via anchor.fm, which is free. Don't have to pay anything for the show at all. So I'm not going through a lot of effort to set up a extensive website or anything like that. I'm just gonna have mostly just the show.
No, you did yourself a number before, but do you want one?
Nope.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. My wife handed me a Swedish fish. And I ate too many before, and it killed my stomach.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you were on mic.
Swedish fish.
And it was a Swedish fish mini that killed my stomach.
A mini?
Yeah, little ones.
What's this network you're on?
Anchor, ANCHOR.FM. And kind of the neat thing they do is they, they will, like, you can set it up and they'll, like, in-line the ads for you. And you get, like, money for impressions and stuff like that from that. So whether I actually get any money from it, we'll see. But, And they also handle setting it up on. I mean, granted, now, is it the most ideal situation? Nope. I don't own my feed. I don't own my website. I don't own anything but the audio I make for it. But I don't care.
Well, when you start cranking them out,
absolutely.
Let me know.
And I will intend at some point having
probably
guests.
Probably Dan, too, because we'll get on and love to talk about this stuff.
Yep. We'll talk about D&D and Star
we'll
Frontiers.
We'll make Joel be quiet and we'll talk RPG.
Did you play Star Frontiers?
No. Like I said, D&D, Dragonstorm, Shadowrun, and Vampire the Masquerade. Granted, I didn't start playing RPGs like that until after I left Northwest Iowa. So I was 18, and so that was 99, 2000, somewhere in that range. Because there was nobody to play with in Iowa, at least not in my small town.
Mm-hmm. I just remember about like right around the time of the video game crash where there was a
E.T.
Yeah, right. Now, there was a in the mall that we had at the time, which is completely different now, had a like a kiosk in the middle of it, and I think it was just this guy. He just ran into a whole big, huge stock of different computer video games. Probably the first time I got a video game that was on a cassette. You know, you had to sit there and wait 30 minutes for it to run before you can actually play it.
Was that on a Commodore 64, you said?
My case was the Atari 800XL.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
But Commodore 64 had a tape drive, too. But
They all did. Commodore 64, I had one for my TI.
And often it was cheaper than buying the floppy. In fact, sometimes a floppy cost more than the computer.
Wait, the floppy disk or the game disk?
No, the drive.
Oh, yeah, they were the floppy disk game disk. Ah. The floppy disks were expensive when they first came out.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. You loved it. Like a floppy disk back then, you fit, what, 360 kilobytes on them? And
You know what was wild? Is my floppy disk for my drive for my TI-99/4A was, you could probably put two dozen Raspberry Pis in it, at least. That's how big the damn thing was.
Dan, thanks for the idea. I'm going to take a 1541 drive, and I'm going to make it a portable Raspberry Pi cluster case. That's a great idea.
I was just thinking about that. I'm like, you know, that would probably be a good idea. You know, just stuff. How many Raspberry Pis can you fit in one of those old floppy drives?
Your Texas Instrument, it had the chiclet keyboard, didn't it?
No, the keyboard wasn't chiclet. It was
okay. So
it was like
a standard.
It was like a standard the 4A. Keyboard,
right? You had the 4A.
Yeah, I had the 4A.
Yeah, the 4 was the one that had the chiclet style keyboard.
And so did didn't the Atari have a chiclet keyboard?
The Atari 400 actually had a membrane keyboard.
Oh wait, what's a chiclet keyboard?
Kind of
like a laptop keyboard.
Kind of like a really similar cheap laptop keyboard.
Yeah, if you go to the TI-99/4 Wikipedia page and look at the, not the 4A, but the /4, that's what I would call a chiclet keyboard.
Okay, because I'm getting it confused with the membrane keyboard. So not the 4A.
Yep.
All right. Let's see.
The 4A is what you had, but the 4.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Just give me a... Oh, wait a minute. No, that was a... They lied to me. I clicked on one for the TI-99/4, and it showed me a picture of the TI-99/4A. Now, let me just do it. Why can't I find one with just a 4? Not a 4.
Yeah, no.
I see a lot of 4As. Come on. Oh, okay. Well, oh, no. Okay, I see what you're talking about with the chiclet keyboard. No, the 99/4A, it looks like it's one of those old-timey, clunky, big-ass buggy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it only did capital letters. Yeah. I think there was something to make it do lowercase, but...
You hit the shift and it, what was it? The shift was for the characters on the front, like the pipe and the arrows.
Yeah, was it a shift key or was it function or something like that?
Well, actually, hold on, there's a shift and there's an alpha lock. Something it did do lowercase.
I just remember there was something with it doing always uppercase all the time by default. I don't know.
Right. But Yeah, and the TI, not Texas, use their own chip in it, not the 6502, which is what almost everybody else used. You know,
yeah,
Atari
went
used
their own
it,
way.
The Commodore used it. Yep. But Atari used it, Commodore used it, Apple used it, and the only difference was the glue chips around it, you know, so far as what they did. And I think probably the one that was probably mostly, I would say probably almost all off the shelf would be the Apple IIs, I think, because, you know, Steve Wozniak, he probably didn't have the knowledge he needed at the time to make his own graphics chips and stuff like that for the Apple II.
But, yeah, the TI had this slot on the side for peripheral plug-in. That's that's where the disk drive would connect to. But
yeah, yeah,
they'd all do pass-throughs, except for the disk drive. I think the disk drive
the was PEB.
Yeah, so you would get the speech synthesizer module, which would say like 124 words. So you would type, it would go to your friend. It would call your friend, "Hey, Matt, F U C K U." So you couldn't curse through it. I think you could
the
program
speech synthesizer.
Yeah, it only did like 124 words. I'm sorry. Continue on.
Did you ever have the PEB for that?
What's the PEB?
The peripheral expansion bay. Yeah, if you look at Wikipedia, they had this peripheral expansion bay, which is pretty much the size of an old desktop computer.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It's
big,
like
silver
this
box.
Big silver box. You could put a disk drive, I think, into it.
Yep, floppy
drives,
right?
I did not have that. My like I said, my disk drive was. It was like the size of a 2.5.
Nobody had it.
It was like the size of a shoebox in length, maybe a little, yeah, about that. And then 2.5, like a shoebox and a half tall. It was big.
Yep.
And a little wider than
the TTI ones. Let's see, a Texas Instruments TMS 9900.
I had a modem too. And I always wanted to connect it online. And I had everything I needed to connect online except the phone line into my room. And I didn't get that until after I graduated high school. And by then, the TI-99/4A was obsolete by many years.
But, yeah, as I say, by then, you had to buy an IBM because you needed to have that to write papers for school.
Well, my dad used to work at AT&T, and they would just throw computers out all the time. So we had one of their computers was a 286, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It was really,
wait, wait. You mean your dad didn't take home a VAX 11750 with an original copy of Unix on it?
He would have if he could find a way. If he would have found one of those, he definitely would have. And he would have still been using that damn thing, too. Because no matter what computer he bought or what operating system, he'd always find a way to go back to like the oldest version of a word processor he could.
It's what he knew.
He hung on to MS-DOS to the bitter end.
Yeah, he hung on to DOS to the end. Which is like, then you're going to love the Linux terminal. Nope.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I will say the one nice thing about DOS and even the Linux terminal for that matter was just that how easy to me it was it's much easier to tell someone how to do something in a text interface than it is in a graphical one. So, like for example, you say type this, type that, do this, do that. You know, typing something, you know, tell them to type the word copy space this and that, you know, it was much easier than say, find the file explorer, click on that and open it up. Find the file you want to move, click and drag.
No, no,
that.
I'm
it's
in
so
Explorer.
Easy.
It's like, no, not Internet Explorer.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, you know, Or like, when you see it, if you still have to guide people on Zooms like I do, You're like, scroll up. Oh, no. Scroll back down. Stop scrolling. I need to read that. So it's like, you know, it's not like, you know.
Doesn't Zoom allow you to take over the desktop?
It does, yeah. Yeah, that's what I did today to fix something for somebody.
Like, get out of the way.
I said,
virtually.
I said, I usually say something like, can I take control? And they're like, sure. I'm like, okay. And then did it. Now, what was funny, though, is I had a cam. They coordinated this call that I was working with the client on. And she's like, I have to go to another call. Well, she forgot to hand me the host rights, so she dropped everybody. And I'm like, here, hold on. I'll send you a link. But yeah, it's easier to do that. And and we're getting deeper into the stuff now at work. Like, we're doing system startup architecture 2, where basically they're trying to set it up so that when you patch, I'm trying to remember if we use, I don't know if we use, I'm pretty sure we don't use Big Fix for Linux, I don't think. But I know we use IBM's Big Fix for pushing out Windows patches. And one thing that they're working on is when our Windows boxes get updated, the service is supposed to recover itself. And I'm not exactly sure how they're doing it, but they're going to do it with Ansible. So I guess I get to learn it.
I'll tell you what, of all those proprietary packaging software deployment systems I've used, no way near the ease of use of like Ansible or Chef or, you know, those proprietary systems were such a pain in the ass.
Yep. I don't understand like I guess you might use a tool like IBM's Big Fix because it can do more than Windows. Like, for example, if there's a bad vulnerability in Java, I suppose you can push Java out that way to your Windows host, you know. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, I don't get to pick which tool to use.
Isn't Java itself the bad vulnerability?
Not really anymore. It's not near as bad as it was. I mean, and I remember not too long ago where it was getting patches every month.
Maybe their motto could be sucks less.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Wait, how do you guys install Java?
That is a good question. I think like when they do new deployments, I think they install it with Ansible. And I'm trying to remember, I want to say, I think we pretty much almost all switched over from Oracle Java to Amazon Coreto because of the licensing of Java now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was going to ask.
Oracle Java licensing.
I know when I'd have to figure out how to install Java, it was always a pain in the ass due to the licensing and where you get it. And you have to watch out which version because then they start putting other versions behind a login.
Yep. Oracle pretty much. If you get the standard old Oracle Java, which is the original Java, and that one is just not really the one you want to use anymore, licensing wise, it's probably just better to switch over to OpenJDK straight up. Or in our case, we use Amazon Coreto for our Windows hosts because the Amazon's come out. That's basically Amazon's packaged version of Java. So, and you can download that for free. They also have it for Linux too, but I don't know anybody who. I'm trying to remember if we use that to keep it the same across the board. We might. Now I know our SaaS clients are different. So it's a little less of the Microsoft stuff. Well, there's still Microsoft technology involved with it just because a lot of our interfaces need it. So unfortunately, for the meantime, but that's stuff we're starting to pick up and learn as a team and really as a company in some ways. So, and hopefully, I don't know if I'm going to make it or not. But we've got an Amazon Cloud Practitioner Study Group. It always meets at 5 o'clock on Thursdays. It's like 5 o'clock, really? I'm like, I'm usually wrapping it up by then. And tomorrow, I'll definitely want to wrap it up by then, since I want to start at 5:30 in the morning.
That's exercise time.
Yeah, I need to do my knee exercises. Haven't done any this week.
You know, that's the first I've heard of Amazon's Java. I didn't even know they had. What's it called?
Coreto. Coreto.
Huh. You know, for it to be any good, you know what it has to do.
No.
It has to play Minecraft, baby.
Oh, probably does.
Let me see. I'm going to see if it does. I don't know. I'm just trying to see if anybody has it playing on Minecraft on there. Because that's the big game, man.
Yeah, I kind of... Let's say I gotta buy my son a TI calculator.
For school?
Or just a graphing calculator?
Yeah, he's the TI 85 for his math class. I think that's the one, I don't know.
You gonna buy used or new?
I prefer to buy used myself.
Yeah.
Don't want to pay $100 for a graphing calculator.
Is that how much they are?
Oh, yeah, they're still expensive. That's
like low cost, yeah.
$800? You get
it. No, $100.
Oh, $100. I was like, you just get an app for your phone in that case. Unless, right. You know, you need to use it for scientific purposes or business, I guess, at a company.
Or you're not allowed to have your phone during a test.
That's right.
Yeah, there is that.
Let's see. Looking it up on Amazon.
How much graphing calculator is?
The TI-84 is 118.
That's the year it came out, right? And it hasn't been updated since. So just keep using the same
probably,
one.
Probably, right? Yeah, TI-84 Plus CE Lightning Graphing Calculator is 128.
What was it, Dave Yates, who would always talk about his graphing calculator? He had the Hewlett-Packard, I think, that did reverse
one.
Polish
notation. Notation, RPN, yeah. Yep.
Was that
I have one.
That was HP's graphing calculators,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. All
right.
Yeah, they had – I had actually both the – 28S, which I liked better than the 48SX, which I also had. And the one reason I liked it better was it was kind of like a clamshell and it had the full alphabet on it too. But I love calculator because it's the best thing, because a lot of the courses that I took, we were doing matrix math. You know, my algebra class solving quadratic equations and all that stuff. And then graphing, too. I mean, like, we would do graphs for, especially when we did our electronic stuff on AC and radio stuff. We definitely did a lot of that. And one thing I always sucked at was Laplace transforms. But I made it through that. I do have the 48SX in my cabinet over here, and I actually should pull it out and see if the batteries are probably dead in it. think HP still makes calculators too, but it's definitely not like it was. See, 48SX had the I think it was a chip that called the Saturn.
Not to be confused with the Sega Saturn.
Yeah, correct. But their current ones just use an ARM-based chip of some sort. But I just can't justify paying what HP wants for one of their graphing calculators now. They sure ain't cheap.
Well, how much are those? Like 150, 200?
I'm looking
it
up now. I think it might be as high as 300. I'm looking it up now, though.
Get me one of them. For no reason at all.
That's right.
HP graphing calculator.
No, they're not that bad. 129 for the HP Prime. But has a color screen now.
It almost looks like an old Palm Pilot type interface.
It does kind of, doesn't it?
Yeah. You're just talking about, how's your Palm Pilot doing, man?
Oh, it's pretty nice. It's pretty good. You know, what's funny is I haven't charged it since I charged it when I first got it. And every once in a while, I pick it up to monkey fart around with it, and it's still holding this charge. My phone can't make it a day.
Well, to be fair, are you using the Palm Pilot as much as you're using your phone, though?
This is probably true.
Joe, that's what you should do. You should throw out your phone, go back to a Palm Pilot, and the phone plugged into your wall. Do you even have a phone plugged into your wall?
No, I don't. Not anymore.
Does anybody have one on the show? Landline?
Nope. No landline. I've never had my own landline.
You never had one?
Even back in the 90s?
Well, when I was a kid, my parents had their own landline. But it wasn't mine. I was in high school in the late 90s.
Oh. Well, so you jumped on the cell phone early on, huh?
Yeah.
With your OmniPoint cell phone. Pay as you go, right?
Yeah, and well, I turned 18 and then, you know, joined the military and then went to Korea. And my first experience was one of those like Nokia bricks in Iowa. And then went to South Korea, and that was my first experience with actually sending text messages, and it was fairly common for everybody to always be sending text messages. So you had a screen that was designed for reading and sending text messages. And then I get back to the States, and like the Sony flip phone that I ended up getting, nobody was text messaging. Everybody was still making phone calls, and text messaging was almost unheard of because they, it wasn't unheard of, but it didn't happen as much because you had only X number of text messages that you could send per month without getting charged extra. And it just kind of surprised me how much more advanced other countries were when it came to cell phone technology.
And still are in some regards.
How so?
No, I mean, like, well, I mean, yeah, they're not much more advanced in the technology, but they use them in far different ways than we do. Maybe I'm talking out. I mean, there's a lot more. I think they adopted them a lot earlier, just like you said, and they've been. I just get the impression that they use them in for stuff that we typically don't.
I think other countries have better tethering options right now. But that's all plan-based as opposed to phone-based. Really, you kind of leveled the playing field when it comes to the actual handheld devices themselves and their capabilities.
I mean, would you say that particularly Japan, and I don't know about Europe, uses their phone to pay for things more than that happens in the United States?
Yes, but while we do have the option here, it's just not widespread. I have used my phone to pay for things. You're kind of limited on places where you can do it. Like you can do it at Walgreens and a lot of your vending machines, you can do it. And some of your gas stations, you can do it.
See, now that there's something right there. Like, would you use your phone to pay for something at a vending machine?
I have, or even a
credit card.
I have too.
At the office, I either use my credit if I'm at the office, which granted it's been a little while. I'm either using a credit card or I'm using my phone at the vending machine. I'm not using cash.
No, I mean not like at the office. Like you're at a rest area or walking down the street.
I feel reluctant to trust it.
That's just like
if you're. It also kind of depends on what payment system you're using too.
Either Apple Pay or the Google Pay. It's very secure. It doesn't even transfer your original card number.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking more of credit cards than so much phones, though. The credit card too.
I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. People put, you know, card readers on those damn things all the time out in public, in ATMs and stuff.
Well, I will admit that when I'm traveling and we go to gas stations, you know, I give the reader a wiggle to see what happens.
I always do that too.
Gives you a wiggle back?
If it wiggles back, I go somewhere else.
That's right. That's right. But like, actually, here's an interesting thing, Dan. I had some things that I had to put in the mail, a box in an envelope. There's the local post office of mine, which is closer to downtown. It's just up Parsons Avenue, right off of it. But there, it's a smaller post office than the one that's over in Grove City, and it's about a crapshoot of which one's closer. So I went over to the post office in Grove City to mail these a package to my boss and a package to a friend, and I didn't even talk to a person. They had a full system, with a scale on it. You would shove it like into the corner and it would measure how big it was, and it would weigh it and would know how it knew how much you had to pay, and it would print out, you'd put your card in and print out a sticker and slap it on there, and then you could put it in the parcel bin. And the same thing with the envelope, it did the same thing. It weighed it, figured out whether what the postage should be, and printed out a sticker. I stuck it on it, and it was that easy. I didn't even have to talk to a single person in the post office.
That sounds like a portable or a remote stamps.com machine that you get for your home.
Pretty much. That's kind of what it was. But and it was real convenient, too. And this is, I like, that a lot of companies are starting to do now with this kind of things. Either, like, if you're either at the store – like I know if Lowe's does this, and quite a few places will do this. They'll ask you, "Would you like your receipt emailed to you?" I'm like, "Heck yeah! Email me that receipt so I don't have to keep it."
Oh, you know, one thing I was shocked at, I'm like, F Home Depot, F them, F them, F them. Not,
I hate them
one,
too.
One
I'd rather
small
go to
reason.
Lowe's.
Not, I'm not saying I hate them. I'm not, but I'll tell you what I hated was what color paint did I buy 6 years ago? Ah, crap. I'm like, can't you just store that information? Because they put the little label on the top. And you either throw out the can or you get a drop of paint across the top of the lid where the sticker is, and you have no damn idea what the paint is. So now I bought paint the other week, and they're like, oh, and do you want to store this under your phone number or email address? I'm like, hell yeah. I'm like, damn right I do. Because yep. It was such a pain in the ass. I actually cut a piece of the sheetrock off, you know, the paper, you know, that had the color on it, and brought it in, and then I got to freaking patch that. But... yeah, just so I could match up the colors.
Make things smart. Yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, I can, in my case, since I have Gmail and it's literally probably, I won't say unlimited anymore, but it's definitely more storage than I need for email. And if it's something I need to keep, I just archive it, and then when I need to look it back up, I'll go back in there. I can go find stuff I emailed to Dan or Link 6 years ago, easy.
Oh, it really is. I do like having, especially, you know, online orders, you have basically a de facto receipt in your email. It's like, what did I pay for that? So I bought some wrong ammo and I brought it. It's like now nobody cares if you open the box. They just care that it exists. Because I had some ammo. I didn't realize I purchased the wrong ammo. And I'm like, oh, let me sell this, you know, 38 special. I meant to buy 380. I got 38 special. Brought it to the gun shop. She's like, I have no problem selling that. I was like, oh, good.
Yep. Or like I bought something like 2 or 3 years ago on Amazon. And I wanted to buy another one because for some reason I either lost what I bought or just wore out, something like that. So I'm like, I go to search for it. And of course the purchaser I bought from back then, you know, doesn't have any, but I at least got the product name off of that. And I was able to plug it in. I found somebody else on Amazon selling the same exact thing. You know, so you know, that, there's something to be said about having somebody keep track of what you bought. And I don't, you know, for me, I'm like, it's probably the most useless data you can ever get from me is to look at what I bought on Amazon, because I buy stuff on Amazon, not just for me, but I buy it, you know, even though I could give my wife the rights to log in and basically have her own profile on Amazon Prime.
No. My wife and daughter are like wearing the hell out of that.
Yeah.
Don't let them.
Oh,
happen.
I'm not
what about you,
them my own. But yeah. Ooh. Yeah, but
wearing the hell out of what? Amazon?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't let anyone onto that Amazon account.
But yeah, I mean, my wife just finds it easier to tell me, go look for that on Amazon and order it, and I'm like, okay, no problem. Like, see, I'll say the weirdest thing I ever ordered on Amazon was a wood chipper.
I don't want to know. Was it the 50-gallon jug of
No, AY? I bought a Chinese-made wood chipper.
Oh, so it wasn't the 55-gallon drum of KY?
No, I'm not Pegwall. I'll shame him to get back on the show.
Well, he's been posting some pictures. You know, I guess he worked this month, so he's taking some time off.
Now, have any of you guys had a drive-in movie theater open up since the virus hit?
That's interesting.
I think I've heard of some people opening up drive-in movie theaters around here.
They're kind of getting a revival.
Makes sense.
The Hampton Coliseum is doing drive-in movies now. They put up some screens, I guess.
Yep.
The local Nazarene church did the same thing. They put up some screens and they had some family movie nights where you would drive in and you'd watch it. I'm trying to remember how they got the audio out. I think they just put big speakers up and you just opened your windows.
You can do local broadcast on FM.
Yeah, exactly.
No more having to worry about running your battery out, right?
Yeah. Or hang a speaker on your 2000 era car, you know?
I guess you could broadcast on Wi-Fi now, right?
Yeah.
You could. Well, I
have it on a website.
Yeah.
Yeah, just UDP.
Icecast streaming server.
Yeah.
You know what, though, Rich? We're the only kind of people that would do that. People going to a church doing that wouldn't do that. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be one click to make it work.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that.
Otherwise, it's broken.
Yeah.
All right, so I love when I read things in the tech world. It's like, 11 easy steps to...
And you're like, we're going, that is easy.
Right. I don't want to throw my friend under the bus, but hold on, here comes the bus. He upgraded his phone, but he forgot his Yahoo password. And it was on his phone and on his computer. I'm like, you mean you don't know it? No. You never set up recovery for it? No. I'm like, I don't know what to do for you. And he's, you know, soliciting my help, but I'm like, you know, I don't use Yahoo, and I have no idea what your password is. I mean, nice guy, friend of mine. You know, I don't want to be a total jerk, but it's like, dude, I can't help you.
How am I supposed to recover your password for you?
Yeah.
And see, one of my favorite ones, and I'm pretty sure this happened, but like, you know, one of the e-commerce providers that our product supports is PayPal. All right, well, I'm going to say they're probably one of the ones that are not as reliable as they should be, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, like I get pulled into a call, and I thought, wait a minute. Didn't I see? Now, see, it just so happens that's who we use where I worked before I came to my company that I'm with now. And I had signed up for there is a way you can sign up for PayPal to get an alert whenever there's a problem with their hosted checkout pages and stuff like that, right? And they'll just send you an email whenever there's a problem, right? So I flip open my personal phone, and I'm like, hey, guys, PayPal's having problems right now. Are they? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, here's the email. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, yeah, so you're going to have to wait until we get an email back from them that says it's fixed. And it's like, you know, and we spent, what, I don't know, 2 hours looking at it. I'm like, that's one of the things, actually one of the things I'm going to work on doing or hopefully do is see if we can set up a synthetic in Datadog so that we can say whenever PayPal updates that web page that we get a page. Because I think that would be useful. Yeah, they seem to be, of the ones that we use, they seem to be one of the least reliable, as far as I'm concerned. And then the other things that I don't like is occasionally we'll get well, I'm not naming names or nothing for the other providers, but one of the providers, they say, well, we need your IP address so that we can put that in our firewall. And I'm like, wait a minute. You do know we're hosting in the cloud, right? And if we fall over from east to west, that IP address is going to change, right?
You're not guaranteed. You don't have a guaranteed IP address, do you?
Depends. If you stay in the same zone, the same availability zone, yes. But if you switch from one to the other, like say from east to west, from one data center to the other, it will change. Now, if you have a DNS entry in Route 53, which is Amazon's DNS service, then it will automatically update that when you fall over from one to the other.
Oh, wait, so they're connecting to a server is what you're saying.
Right.
I thought this was going the other direction, like you had.
Right, from the provider to us. And I'm like, can't your firewall accept FQDN? They're like, no. I'm like, well, that's dumb.
No, firewalls accept FQDN because the FQDN can be hijacked at the DNS level.
Fair enough.
So they could just take a bunch, all your IP addresses, can't they?
Or AWS, just let anything from AWS. I don't know, but that would be dangerous.
If you have a static IP address from AWS, you should be able. Do you want them to open up everything from AWS? That's a pretty big network.
That's a huge CIDR block, isn't it?
It's a lot of stuff behind that.
I think we do kind of have a workaround where if you you can set it up normally it would sit something like this would sit behind an Elastic Load Balancer on Amazon. But you can set up where it goes directly to the EC2 instance. So, and in that case, I think that IP address never changes, even in a fallover situation, if I remember right. But I'm still learning that stuff.
Yeah, the only time our IP address changes is when I change it. And that's because we did something wrong.
Right. Well, see, you use Google now. Google, I assume, has their own version of what Amazon will call Route 53. Right?
Well, actually, you know, to be honest, that we go through Fastly, so we can change the IP address all we want because it just flies back through Fastly. So when people have to connect to something from the outside, that's how it goes.
Yep. But that's actually kind of what my change is tomorrow is we got to go through the host tomorrow, and we've got to anywhere where there's an IP reference, we have to change it to the FQDN because we're going to change instance types, like from R3 to an R4, and when that happens and we reboot the box, it's going to come up on a different IP address for some reason. So if we put the host name in, Route 53 should be updated, and we should have no problems. So, well, that's if their job does that. So, but
yeah, I was gonna say when that new system comes up, it's gonna have to register itself.
Yep.
With Route 53 to that IP.
Yep. Mhm.
That's what our systems would do when we were in AWS going through Scalar. And now with containers, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, eventually we're going to get through to containers too, but, you know, we'll see. Because there's certain things, like, what would make sense for us with container-wise, and I don't even know if we could do this, but, like, it would be nice if we could give each... like say for example the UI, which is I call it a desktop UI because that's essentially the same thing for us, but it's all web page essentially, but it's only used by staff and employees of an institution. All right, but it would be nice if they could subdivide each environment, like the test environment and the development environment, into their own different Kubernetes container.
Why couldn't they do that? That's the way we do it.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, I assume that's what we're going to do. Right now, we just have it's just like a Windows host, and you just install a different see, they could even go through and have different DNS entries for that, so that you would just the port would always be the same. You would just go to a different fully qualified host name, you know. And you could even have, and with the main containerized, you can still basically use the same amount of resources that you would on the on just one Windows host. Theoretically.
That's a monster host.
It wouldn't be too bad. We'd only have like three environments, and that all runs nicely at a in a relatively decently. Doesn't have to be huge host for that one, but.
So so they run the development and staging systems on the same system as production?
No. No, they're on their own systems.
Oh.
But it's not quite as nice. We kind of have our product kind of has its own built-in like versioning system. We call it a local product repository, which stores both basically both our code, as in our company's code, and any customizations that the client might have. So in a traditional sense of how you would normally deploy, we can't really do, because the system all has to, the LPR is essentially a database, has to know about all where all your customizations are, and things like that. And it has every version of it too. So like, for example, you could probably go dig in the LPR and find the code for three patches ago if you needed it, you know, if you really, really needed it. But nobody does that, you know, because we're just usually running on the, I wouldn't say bleeding edge code, but like a code that's like a month or two old, you know. And unfortunately, there's no way to do it, at least with what we work with. Now, our SaaS clients might do things differently, or I should say the SaaS team might do things differently, because I think they actually have a more efficient way of rolling out software updates than we do through the traditional systems. So,
good night, guys.
Hey, good night,
yes.
Joe.
Yes.
I'll talk to y'all next week.
Sleep well.
Yep.
So what you're saying is, in the traditional system, like, you have a development, a staging, and production are all separate. Then, like, are you running multiple clients off a single system? Is that, and is they're separated like that, or does each one get their own system?
Now, it depends. Like, for example, we have a non-prod and a production system. Now, the non-prod might run one too many non-prod environments all in the same system. So, right. For example, you'd have test one, test two, in a development environment, all right? Or you might have staging and a development environment and maybe another test environment. Or you might have an environment called live simulation that was used for doing a live simulation of your go live. You know, but in all intents and purposes, they are separate systems, but in a non-prod, they might all live together on the same system. Like if it's a Linux client, it'd be a Linux host. If it's a SQL client, you'd have a Windows application server and a Microsoft SQL server. So at least in the area we live. Now, if you're SaaS, they've figured out they're starting to port our product over to a Aurora DB from the running Postgres files for the database versus SQL. So that is going to be different, of course. So
right.
So and it's in the reason they can do that is because they're SaaS. You know, because there's no customizations for a SaaS client. Very very few. If there are any, it's usually just a print subroutine. So like a good example might be printing paychecks, you know. Different colleges will put different things on their paycheck based on whatever they need to show. Like, for example, they may want to print the city tax field on the stub, you know, or the check, you know, or they may want to print certain things that we don't normally print on our standard check. So the client would have to work on getting a customization to do that. So, and in the SaaS world, that's pretty much the only one sheet you can get. The little, what we call, like I like to call little C customization. When you're working in insurance with us through hosting, it's far more flexible. It's essentially just picking it up. Most, I won't say pick and shift where you pick your on-prem system and drop it on our systems. It's not quite that. But it's close. Pretty close to that. Migrating the data and all that, that's fun stuff. I'm joking, of course. It's not that fun. It's just a pain in the ass. One of these days, hopefully, they'll start making changes so that, and the overall push is decustomization, so that people, more people, can come over to the SaaS world.
And I bet it works out cheaper for them in the long run, doesn't it?
That I think that probably would, because you see, what a lot of people don't really realize is that, you know, is especially when it comes to really any product, when you really think about it, is everyone thinks, well, we're special, all right, until they get the price. And when you get that price for your special kind of package, then you think, well, maybe I don't need, like, to use a house as an example, maybe I don't need the $3,000 countertop. Maybe I'll just go with the $1,500 Formica that everybody else has. Because, like, the more you change your house, the more things increase in price. Like, here's a good example. We're looking at one of the houses we're looking at possibly building. You got base model, which is what, $285,000 is what they would charge to build on the plot. And then if you build on the basement plot, well, even though the plot is indicated as a basement plot, all right, even though they could make the decision and not put a basement on it and build it on a slab, unfortunately those are basement lots, so you have to build the base.
Is this Linux in the basement?
Yeah, nah, that show's long dead. So in the build the basement, like we priced it out in this one model house. If you build on a slab and you paid for the loft, the loft basically it's a loft with a one half of it is just like a living area. Or in my case, it would be my office. The other half would be conditioned storage.
Joel, are you building a new house? Is that what's going on?
Very possible. Very possible.
After you did all these upgrades to your house, you're getting out?
Yeah, and it's more for multiple reasons. You know, some of the things that we're looking at, the house we're looking at.
Let me ask you, are you getting a... It sounds like you're getting a two- or three-story house.
No, more like a ranch. But
so two-story.
If we had the main living area will all be on one floor, but then there might be a loft or a basement on. So
now my very healthy wife, who's the fitness instructor, made us buy the death house that only had one floor.
So
this is the house we're going to die in.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what this is going to be. You know,
and
we're,
then
we're
she
buying...
told me she wants to buy a new house.
Oh, no. But yeah, in our case, like, you know, we want, and kind of one of the reasons we're looking at building is because we basically want to don't have to worry about this stuff for the rest of our life. You know, most of the stuff would be all brand new, build 2020, you know, or 2021 by the time we finally get everything done.
Dude, look, the refrigerator I bought 13 years ago is going, you know, Tango Unit.
Oh, yeah.
And I, And I'm told by the repair person that, oh, these ones can't be fixed. I'm like, what?
A lot of them are that.
Like the nice, like the bottom, I don't want to say you can't get a refrigerator cheaper. You can. But the comparable refrigerator to what I got 13 years ago is $1,300 now.
Oh, yeah.
And I went through Costco. The refrigerators are $3,300, like the really nice ones.
Exactly.
I'm not talking Sub-Zero. I'm just talking, you know, like a nice whatever.
My brother had one, and it died after like 6 months.
Yep. Well, and holy, that's like a walk through this model house. Like one of the models we checked out over the weekend, I thought about it, but then I thought about it again, and I thought, nah. Both models had a gas stove, which I'm like, okay, I'm hip with that. That'd be awesome.
Joel, have you looked at financing lately?
Yeah, it's actually not that horrible. But
so, well, we're actually refinancing. We're getting a smidge. I'm like, you know, it's like 3 1/16.
Yeah. Not even. See, we only owe, if you count both the original, the first mortgage and the home equity line of credit that we have, we only owe about $70,000 on this place right now. And it's worth way more than that. So
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I got like 70 about the payments. I'm almost done.
Yeah. So you know, refinancing really wouldn't help us all that much. It would just extend how long we would have to pay this place off.
No, I'm just saying, if you're looking to buy a house, now's a good time to buy a house. Although...
Oh, it's a buyer's market for sure.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, my house, I got into the house for, I think, $465,000,
and
they're saying...
Actually, take it back, seller's market. It's a seller's market. There's actually kind of a shortage in our area of homes. But that means it's a good thing because I can probably find somebody to buy this place fairly easily. Now, that's...
Over here, we're getting flooded from the New Yorkers trying to escape the city burning down around them.
Well, that's also a lot of it. Now, what's funny, though, is I'm trying to remember probably 2-3 weeks ago where the neighbor put their house up. It wasn't even up for a week before the new owner closed on it and moved in. So, I mean, it was amazing. So in my neighborhood, they're selling fast because the houses – in our neighborhood, they did increase, but they're not as high as like some of the new builds. Like the new builds are, I haven't seen a new build that's been lower than 200,000.
All right, anyway. My house went up 140 grand in 6 years,
right?
According to Zillow.
Yep. And the original buying price when we bought this back in '98 was 104, and it's worth 170 now, easy. So I mean,
my place I paid $235. It's probably upwards of $400 now.
Right, right.
I was gonna say $235. That's a nice house for $235.
And we'd also like to make that decision before we get too much older too, because the older we get, the harder it's gonna be getting in 30-year again. You know, No.
You'll get a 30-year no matter what. There's age discrimination laws.
So in any event, though, our payments
you do your own reverse mortgage is basically you retire, you refinance the maximum that you can and enjoy it.
Yep. But the place we're looking at, if we can get a plot, that's the problem, is the one we want to move to. They haven't even got wood frames up in any of the plots. But they're almost all sold. There's like 5 left. So they got, basically, we drove over there and it's just streets and dirt now.
So where do you want to be? Because you work remote anyhow. What's your wife doing?
Well, she wants to stay in Franklin County. I'm telling her she's insane, but
that's does she have a job that keeps her there, or what's she doing?
That's actually part of it. Part of she technically has 2 jobs. She has her job working for Cass Logistics, but she also has a job that she gets paid by the county to be Luke's caregiver, believe it or not. She gets paid to do that, even though we would normally do that anyway.
Right.
So they pay her. It's actually fair because it's kind of a little bit more than what you normally would go through because part of it is it's built into it where she has to he has to cook something once a month or something like that, just so that he starts to learn how to take care of himself.
Maybe, you know? I can get paid to caregive my wife, because my wife doesn't cook anything once a month.
Yeah, so that's kind of another, and I never really thought about that until maybe tail end of last week, was that if we moved out of Franklin County, we would lose that income unless she could score a similar job in the other county. So the development we're looking at, it's actually probably about 15 minutes away.
All right. So if you move, let's say almost, it's not quite across the street, but within 5 miles is Martin County. So I'm on the north end of Palm Beach County. But if I went over to Martin County, the taxes would be less. So if you found something like, hey, the taxes are less, and it's significantly less enough, it doesn't matter whether you get that extra income.
Right.
That might be a good benefit.
That's the thing, is actually, I think, I don't know if taxes are more in Columbus or more in Grove City. Grove City is where we're looking at. Grove City is just to the south of Columbus. It's out of Columbus, out of Mayor Ginther's rule. Because I'm not a huge fan of our mayor.
The economy.
Quite a bit.
Holy city, full economy.
Yep. And the neighborhood, it's really kind of interesting too. We went drove over in some of the other developments, looking at other places over there, and we're driving around this one. One side of the road had cottages. The other side were houses, and the cottages. That's what they called them, cottages. They were houses, okay?
Little 2-3-bedroom ranches.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and we're just driving around, and we don't know anybody over there, and there's people waving at us. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of like that.
Yeah, they're getting paid to wave at you.
maybe. But yeah, I mean, it's like driving around my neighborhood, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing here for? You know? So, the development we're looking at is now granted, I'm not a huge fan of HOAs, but this is one of the ones that might make it actually worth it. Because there's really two figures that we have to pay. One is just the standard HOA that everybody in a development pays. And that goes towards paying for the upkeep of the trails, and there's a swimming pool. That is taken care of.
A swimming pool that you don't go to?
No, I'd go to it. If we lived there, I'd definitely go to it every day.
Oh, I thought you meant currently. I don't go to my swimming pool, and it's 8 feet away from me.
Well, you see, and you're just there's no counting for taste. But in any event, the other thing, though, and this is becoming more attractive as we're getting older, is this particular section of the development, it's $1,200 a year, and it's paid quarterly. They do all the yard work. They do all the snow shoveling, all the snow removal. You never have to do it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what was that word? What shoveling?
Snow shoveling. That, you live in Florida, you don't know what the fuck that is. But to not have to shovel snow or mow grass or anything, the only kind of negative thing is you can't put up a fence in your own yard, which I don't care. I don't like fences anyway. So
I like fences. It keeps people out of my backyard when I'm
exactly.
shooting.
Exactly.
Well, I wouldn't shoot my backyard.
Because I keep having to dig holes and bury. I'm sorry, what?
The only real reason to hate an HOA is because you don't want to actually bother with the political bullshit of the HOA. Because if I went over there, one of the things I would do is I'd try to run for office over there just because I'd want to say. But I think almost every development we've looked at has one. And it's far more than what they pretended to have one here for, like, I don't know, a year after we moved in, and then the officers decided we're not doing this anymore, because what they discovered was if you're an officer in an HOA, you're doing most of the work, dude. Any of the cockamamie crazy ideas you come up with, like what they wanted to put up pillars at the end of the street that had the development name on it, or the subdivision name on it. I'm like, good luck with that. I'm not giving you any money for it. In fact, they actually never did ask anybody for money for it. They just did it. You know, and then they just said, we're not doing this anymore. We can't get anybody else to help. Well, it's like, well, no matter what, when you're in a community organization, the officers, the president of that organization, the secretary, it's like an OLF. Those are the folks that do most of the work. Bethlyn works her butt off. You know, and because it's kind of her baby, and they actually, in the Linux community, not quite the same comparison, but it doesn't matter. That person's still going to do a lot more work. Whoever's leading it is going to do more work. It's just a fact. So the same thing happens in those places, but so I don't mind it, you know, because in now the ham radio operator in me screams about an HOA because, you know, someday I would like to put up an antenna tower.
I want to put a gun range in my
property. Right. But I honestly don't, it doesn't really bother me all that much right now. You know, I'm more into the portable operations anyway, you know, than I am having this big mammoth. Yeah, because let's face it, an antenna tower is a dream for me. Because an antenna tower, adding an antenna tower to any property I'm on, whether it's this one or the new one, minimum would be, and this is counting filing all the paperwork for any variances that I may need, the PRB one and all that, you're talking $10,000 probably. Depends on where you're at, though. Without the HOA and out in the middle of the sticks, you don't have to deal with any of that, which is true. It's just I'd love to do that, but you know, losing that income is not going to happen. I don't want to lose that income. I just realized how much it was when she showed me. So I'm like, oh yeah, you want to keep that job, but especially since you don't have to work hard to get paid for it. But so, you know, and it's, and the fact that, like I said, I'm getting older and there's going to be a point where I don't give a rat's ass and I don't want to do any yard work. So that's attractive to me because yeah, then I can have fun and do the things that I want to do instead of going out and pulling weeds and chopping wood,
cutting
branches off.
Not
yeah.
What'd
you say?
Yeah. Stop watching. Enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably, you know, it's like it's a mini fiefdom, you know. Definitely very socialist as far as I'm concerned, but that's
it's like an
one
extra
I
layer
can,
government you don't need.
Yeah, in a lot of cases. Now, see, it all depends.
Let's have the EU and have another layer of government.
It all depends on the HOA itself, because some of them are actually not bad. Most of them that I have run into, have some little, everything has some little negative about it, but most of the ones, yes, I've seen both good ones and bad ones. A friend of mine lives in a decent one where the HOA organizes a lot of family friendly events and stuff so that, you know, the neighbors can get out and see each other and stuff, and it makes it feel more welcome in some cases, in my opinion. Because in my neighborhood, I don't know any of my neighbors, and nobody gives a shit about anybody. So, there's something to that. So, you know. But, you know.
Well, it depends on what you want.
That's right. It's exactly it, you know. So, you know, and so that's one we're looking at. There's another one, another builder we're looking at, Rockford Homes. I'm not sure. I haven't actually seen the model in that one yet. But what's kind of cool is we did see, if we build with Fisher Homes, they're the ones that we have seen the model, and it's gorgeous. In fact, I am I went in the basement. It's huge. I mean, it's like anything that's in my garage that I have now that I don't need to use on a constant basis doesn't need to be in the garage. We'll go in the basement in the new house.
I'm old school. I like putting cars in garages.
Right. Well, that's it. That way I can put cars in garages.
Some people like to put all their crap in the garage.
Yeah, because I have storage in my garage, you know. I'm going to call it master suite, but, you know, a lot of the builders are changing it to owner suite. But the master suite has a huge walk-in closet. One of the things I said, and this is probably what I do because I don't have that. You know, it's going to take us years to fill that. But one of the things I'm not a clothes horse. I mean, I work from home. I mean, you know, even in the winter, I don't wear pants. I wear shorts all the day, you know, unless I go outside. So. But the walk-in closet's large enough I can take my current dresser and stick it in there. That's what I'm going to do if we get out of that house.
Old houses don't have this enormous closet. Anywho, I got to jump off.
Yeah,
we got to wrap this up. Joel, you got
I got to get up butt crack of dawn.
All right, I'm going to play us out the promos. You have a good one. Stay safe. There they are.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
Oh my god,
it's Hacker
Public Radio! Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at script language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yep. And La Croix out of my fridge in here. Just some seltzer water. Take my pills and hopefully in a half hour I'll be asleep. I gotta wake up. About, see, the start time is 5:30, but if I finish it early enough, I'm going to take an hour or so off that, between that and the regular work day.
Well, good luck. I'm going to stop the recording.
I haven't been getting more.
Mm-hmm. Tastes like
cheese. I have.
All right. Yeah. Everybody stop talking about Rich.
He don't care.
We didn't think he was going to come.
I come every day.
Better for your
health.
That's
what she said. Is this is one of those shows where I'm probably gonna go and towards the end of the show pop my sleeping pill because I gotta change at 5:30 in the morning. Fixing people's crap.
It was with my mouth.
Yeah, we got dumped on at that tropical storm that blew through.
That's
dude,
what
we
I
got
heard.
Like nothing here. Florida, pretty much. Didn't even get windy.
We got about
not by COVID, huh?
In about 6 hours.
Dude, the COVID's all up by you. It's all the media making like crazy stories about COVID in Florida. Just not happen. Just not true.
I know. One of my friends, the doctor in the Orlando area, he says that the stories that the hospitals are overloaded is a little crap.
I work for a hospital. My wife works for a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm okay with keeping up the COVID propaganda because it saves me $1,000 a month.
I got a call from our insurance guy and got the good news that I don't normally get from my insurance guy, and
you're
that
pregnant?
Our car insurance is going down by $50 a month.
Exactly.
And not because of the COVID. It's because I actually have good credit now, apparently. We're better than I thought we did, which is a good thing, too.
I guess paying for somebody else's modem every month for the last forever has really helped out.
Yeah. That reminds me, I need to go see about swapping that out one of these days, just because it's been getting flaky. Like, all of a sudden, it'll just disconnect from the internet, and the only way I can get back is bouncing the modem and the router.
Yeah, my generator battery was dead, so I hooked up the inverter to the car idling, and I charged the battery off of that. Worked pretty good. I'm getting about 1,400 watts off the car.
Well, was the was it a 12-volt battery on the generator?
Yeah.
You could have just used jumper cables and jump started it.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
See, you're looking for the complex solution.
But the
that's
inverter
what happens
worked
with
well.
You IT
I have
guys.
To say, that worked well. Now, but, I have an 800-watt inverter, and then I got like a big 6,000-watt inverter. I think I need to get like a 2,000-watt in between, you know?
Yeah, so the inverter I have is a 4,000 peak, 2,000 continuous, and that'll power all my refrigerators. Keep
yeah,
my duff beer cold.
The 6,000 worked pretty well. Yeah, I got a PowerBright 6,000-watt inverter.
Did you get it on Amazon?
I think I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got mine on Amazon.
That's actually a good one.
Tracy Holtz recommended what I got.
Yeah, I got a little 800-watt Cobra. I think I need to get like a 2,000-watt, somewhere in that mid-range, you know? I think the 6,000 is overkill for most things.
Well, what is the efficiency? What's the bad part about using a 6,000 watt if you're only, you know, powering a 60 watt light bulb?
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I was only getting about 1,400 watts for your car.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Because I forgot if it was Link or Alan. Alan has the Prius, and, you know, my wife has a hybrid, so figure just turn it on, hook the inverter up to it, because she used to have the diesel, the Jetta diesel, and, you know, go from there.
Ripping up my color powered pizza. It's a pizza with a cauliflower based crust.
Nice.
It's, yeah. Well, put it this way, it's better for you. That's about it.
That's kinda, a good plan.
Yeah. A little bit less in the carbs.
Probably not much less, though. I mean, cauliflower has carbs.
But the good carbs, the fiber.
That's the marketing.
That's what pineapple is for.
Mm-hmm. Or oatmeal.
Spinach, broccoli.
No, I was talking about pineapple on top of your pizza.
That ain't right. That is not
right. That ain't right.
It's very unholy, man.
It's awesome. Ham and pineapple on top of pizza.
There you go, Pat.
I love pineapple. I love pizza. It doesn't mean they go together.
They brought a Lay's potato chip flavor that you might like, Pat.
That was pizza. Some red pepper on top.
Yeah, I saw the memes going around.
Grimaldi's pizza from New York, apparently.
I never heard of that brand, but whatever.
You know what? Maybe that's funny. I didn't either.
Never fucking heard of it.
I've heard of it.
Grimaldi's, and then
That's because Pat's a Staten Islander. He's not a real New Yorker. Staten Island's the forgotten county.
I've left the People's Republic of New York for 20 years, and I have no fucking desire to ever set foot in that state again. I might
Dude, high five,
New York
man.
If they separate from New York City.
Well, you know, all I gotta say is New York is full of bigots because they think anything north of Yonkers is upstate. Realistically, you know, that's 90% of the frickin' landmass. They have no clue what New York is. Or when somebody from Brooklyn or Queens says they're gonna go out on the island, meaning Nassau or Suffolk, which the other two counties that are on Long Island are Brooklyn and Queens. Actually, it's King and Queens County.
Yeah, I would have a problem if they blew the bridges and let those fuckers grow a fucking weed germ off the fucking
and cut a moat across the Cross Island Parkway so
exactly.
They can't get into Nassau County.
F all, is what I say. Good luck with that. You got Central Park. Grow some fucking crops there.
Well, all I gotta say is if New York is so great, how come everybody is leaving it? How come they're... It's the number one
Chicago
state
too.
For exodus. Yeah.
Well, they got commie mayors that are letting them burn the city down.
What? No. That's because of Trump. You know, that's I saw a Joe Biden ad today, and that's because of Trump.
All I have to say is go into a gun shop and see how much stuff they got in stock.
I was at my shop today.
Ammo.
There was boxes and boxes.
What ammo do they have?
Oh, nothing. They had nothing. I actually sold them
gone.
Some ammo.
Everything is gone.
I got 1,500 rounds of 380, brand new bolt pack that I got to get rid of.
It's insane how much the ammo's shot up, price, especially AR-15. All the common shit, like 9mm and 308 and 5.56. Oh my god.
Why would I buy ammo?
Exactly.
You already have ammo. Right?
Ding, ding, ding. It's called dollar cost averaging. When a price
reloaded,
of 1,000... drops in Pat, the ammo that I had, I'm not going to say. Ammo that you've seen that I've had, I still have.
Me too. I'm good. I can supply my own militia.
Yeah, my least desirable, or the rifle that I use the least, I have 4,000 rounds for.
My shitty, it's not shitty, but my 357 SIG, I got 1,000 rounds on that crack. and then I would shoot that thing.
Rich, did you fly over Ohio today? Because there's a friend of mine posted it up by Ohio State University. There's an aircraft emergency.
Now, I have not committed any aviation activities in a while, just because I am financially unable.
Unable.
Oh, wait. I did commit an aviation-related activity. I helped a widower move her husband's, or her former, her late husband, let me say that correctly, her late husband's kit that he did almost no work on. I'm like, lady, you should just donate this to the Rutan Aircraft Museum and take the tax write-off. You're probably going to be better off financially. But got it moved and stored at a friend's house. And it's unfortunate. I didn't even realize. I met the guy like 13 years ago at Matatuck, when Matatuck Airport was a premier light-combing building shop. And they had a free engine build seminar. And I remember talking to the guy, and he was telling me about the plane that he was building, and which he did nearly.
Did you ever buy a Microsoft Flight Simulator at all?
Somebody gave it to me.
Yeah, because the new version's coming out August 18th, and if you've seen some of the video, it is impressive.
Why wouldn't it? That's where everything's going.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be 4K, Ultra HD, all that stuff. I prefer watching. You ever seen Air Force Pilot 95?
Nope, no idea what you're talking about.
No, it's a YouTube channel recorded with Flight Simulator X Steam Edition. It's pretty funny. You can pretend to be the air traffic controller and things like that, and they'll do crazy stuff. Like they'll fly out, like start flying in San Francisco, try and fly out to one of the aircraft carriers, and all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, he's just got a whole bunch of videos that are pretty funny, but it's a pretty entertaining. It's almost like watching Russian dash cams, but in a Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yeah, there's X-Plane, which I had, which was the best simulator of the time, and then there was a plug-in for ATC, so other people would act as controllers, and then you would work with them.
Yeah, but like you'll see them I think his funniest ones are when people realize who the guy is in the air traffic controller or flying there, and they'll say, "Hey, are you blah 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 95? Am I going to be on YouTube?" Yeah, he plays all the radios from in game, and it can be pretty hilarious. It's juvenile, but then I don't care. So, and occasionally he does some serious stuff. Oh, excuse me.
Guess we should start the show, huh?
Yeah.
There's a show? Now. Yeah, come on. I only got a few more minutes here.
Wow, where you
got to be? Is that Cricket Stan? I got other podcasts that like me better.
Any other podcasts?
Who gives
All
you free
other
stuff?
Podcasts. Free stuff? Where? What podcast would that be?
Every once in a while, Dorf sends you something, doesn't he?
No, I don't. Did he send me something? I think once he sent me something. But he told me not to talk about it.
Bastard.
Dan, is that crickets? You got crickets in your basement now?
No, I got crickets in my front yard.
Are you in your front yard?
Yeah, actually, I am. Trying it from the remote office today, from the work office.
Not in the basement.
Is that because they're doing a wash? Is that why you're not in the basement?
No, because it's nice out.
Oh, yeah? After the storm went through?
We didn't get much of anything either. It was like a lot of wind.
Oh, wow.
Tornado warnings. We really lucked out.
Yeah, my wife was like, I can't believe you. I'm like, we were inside the cone. We were inside the predicted path. And it was just, I mean, I didn't put the shutters up, but, you know, I did move a lot of stuff around to secure
it. Well, it never got the hurricane strength, though, didn't it?
No, I don't think we had winds over 35 miles an hour.
I didn't think so, yeah.
We didn't even get an inch of rain.
We probably got more in Ohio than you did.
Probably.
It rained almost a week so far.
Did you get a lot of rain, Pat?
What's that, Dan?
I said, did you get a lot of rain?
We got about 9 inches up there.
Yeah,
it rained for about 6 hours. It was pouring.
We had a few downpours, but again, I don't even think we got 2 inches. Did we get 2 inches? I don't think we got.
It poured here, man. We got flooding like in the usual spots. The rivers, you know, all the low-lying areas.
Easton.
Yeah. All the usual spots.
Oh, yeah.